Bonjour, good morning. My name is Olivier Krug and I'm very, very pleased to share the philosophy of Krug with you today.
Welcome to Wine and Dine. My name is Lynn Crelo Chamberlain, host. You're listening to iWine Radio. Today on Wine and Dine, we have the grand pleasure of meeting Olivier Krug. And I'm going to say it only one time because beyond that, it really needs no other introduction. Champagne Krug. From here on out, we will just say Krug. He's joining us from the winery in Reims. And we thank him so very much for his time. And let me start by asking, Olivier, I'm curious. Your family has such a rich history. And what is your philosophy of Krug, growing the grapes and making wine? How is it different from your father and your grandfather?
Good morning, everyone. It's a great pleasure to share with you today. My philosophy is not very different from the philosophy of the previous generation. Actually, I am the sixth generation of Krug, working at Krug since 1843, when my great-great-great-grandfather started Krug with a very clear vision of champagne. For him, champagne was about pleasure. No one ever opens a bottle of champagne for any other reason than pleasure. So he decided to create a champagne that would offer not only the best possible expression of champagne every year, but also the richest one, a champagne that goes beyond the influence of vintages.
Mm-mm. And in fact, establishing that continuity, it's very difficult. It takes a lot of work, doesn't it?
It does take a lot of work for sure, but we have, of course, a great team led by Eric Lebel, the chef de cave, and his team of winemakers. And we have a lot of workers in the cellar who've been working at Krug for decades, for some of them. Mm-hmm. And this is very important to rely on those people and their ability to transmit from generation to generation.
When people work in cellars, do they actually, is it a generational thing where the father and the grandfather work in the cellar? Do they learn it and pass it on that way? Or do you have new people that come into the cellar?
We have new people coming into the cellar because the world has changed and the world is opening and there is more choice to get great and new people. But the transmission is done from generation of worker to generation of worker.
Okay.
For example,
okay.
A riddler would tell the next riddler how to riddle the Krug bottles because they don't have exactly the same champagne inside, because the shape is not the same, etc., etc.
Oh, okay. You bring up a good point. So all of the Krug wines are hand-riddled?
No, actually, a very little part of them are hand-riddled. We hand-riddle the small lots, but we are like everyone in Champagne, riddling with the Giro palette,
okay,
which is the best in terms of quality for sure.
Yes, and it gets the job done a little faster, yes?
A little faster, which doesn't change anything in the whole process of Krug, because you know we need 7 years or 8 years to release a bottle of Krug, sometimes 20 years.
Wow.
So it's not about gaining time, but it's about having probably a better organization and also a more consistent riddling, because what a machine does is consistent.
Do you participate in the blending session every year? And as I recall, does that take place in like February or March?
I do participate in the blending session every year. We are currently at the end of the winter. We are still testing the base wine from 2013. This week we've been testing every day during 1 hour, every morning, 15 reserve wines, because we have to go through the 150 different wines covering the library of reserve wines we have at Krug. And in a few weeks, around Eric Lebel, the chef de cave, we will start talking about the recreation of the next Grand Cuvée, the Grand Cuvée that you will drink in 7 or 8 years in the U.S.
Wow, that's unbelievable. I would imagine that is a fun blending session to be a part of, the conversation, because you're always, you know, talking about the memory of other vintages and how you have to tweak things to contain this consistency.
Absolutely. Every year we have around 250 different vinifications coming from each of the plots from which we source the grapes at Krug. And we have those 150 reserve years. Therefore, we have 350, 400 different wines from which we will make the selection. We test all of them twice, if not three times. And we are six members in the testing committee, which means that the chef de cave, Eric Lebel, has 100 of testing notes to go through until he proposes the next Grand Cuvée. And this is fascinating, very exciting, tiring, and sometimes fun.
Does he handwrite his tasting notes, or does he enter it into a little laptop?
He handwrites, but we've decided to put everything in a computer to make sure we keep the memory for the next generation.
And that way he can share his tasty notes with everybody else at the table.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm.
But actually his own tasting notes are the addition
right.
of the tasting note of the six members of the committee.
Oh, boy, that would be a fascinating read. I would imagine, well, I certainly would enjoy reading that. I would think there'd be some people that would enjoy reading those tasty notes. And
probably,
just...
but after two or three pages, I'm sure you would jump on the first glass of Krug Grand Cuvée you would find and have something much more fun.
I must say that recently I had the pleasure of experiencing the Grand Cuvée for the first time. And
oh, great.
I was absolutely struck by how unique the acidity profile, the taste in the mouth. It was so different from any other champagne I've ever experienced in my life. And there was almost a, dare I say, a lemony sort of flavor to it.
Yes, absolutely. That was the dream of my great-great-great-grandfather, to create this champagne that would express at the same time the richness, the intensity, the depth of the greater champagnes, but yet keeping the freshness, the citrusy. My Japanese friends talk about yuzu character, spices, etc. And Krug Grand Cuvée is probably, if not the wine, the champagne, that offers the largest spectrum of sensation. Actually, U.S. Master Sommelier told me 3 years ago that on his wine list, which was one of the largest in the U.S., there was no other wines offering from one sip more sensation than a sip of Grand Cuvée Krug.
I believe it. It was shocking to me. It was so unique.
Thank you.
In a good way, in a very good way, because I adore champagne. It was absolutely the most unique champagne experience I've ever had.
Oh, thank you. I'm so pleased to hear. And actually, I have people telling me and telling the team at Krug every day about their first time with Krug. And there is not a testimony, there is not a personal story without emotion. You know, it's never
yes.
technical.
Yes.
You don't fall in love with Krug because it has Pinot Noir or Pinot Meunier or whatever.
Yeah.
You fall in love with Krug because it offered emotion that people were not even expecting from a great champagne.
Oh, boy, that is a story in a bottle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. So, as you mentioned, I've never heard this term, yuzu.
Yes, it's a Japanese little citrus that tastes somewhere between citrus and tangerine. It's very Japanese. They need two or three little zests in a soup, and that changes the finesse of everything.
Oh, whoa.
I personally love it.
I'm going to try and find out how to spell that, if there's an English translation at all, because that is a very nice word. I think that's probably my favorite descriptor of wine would be something that's citrusy.
Yes.
Mm. I'm curious, before we run out of time here with this first segment, Krug is available worldwide. What is right now the fastest growing market?
The fastest growing market, actually, and I'm very pleased to tell you, beside Asia, last year was the U.S.
Really?
And it's a big pride in my family, because some decades ago, Krug was a big, big, big name in the U.S. For example, Krug was served for the inauguration of the Statue of Liberty.
Oh.
Because it was at that time considered in the U.S. as the top champagne brands.
Yes.
And then I don't know what happened in history, but we became slightly more discreet and we were less known in the US. And so for the last 4 or 5 years, I myself and the rest of the team, we went to the US several times a year. We talked to people. We organized a lot of testing, sharing stories, etc. And it's a great, great pleasure to see that the US market is today one of the most active markets for Krug. And it is only the beginning of this love story, I tell you.
I was reading something in the news before Christmas that there was already an upswing in champagne consumption in the United States, because which people then decided indicated that the economy was going a little bit better.
Well, champagne works with happiness, and happiness is never very far from the economy. It is sure that when the economy goes well, the champagne business goes well. Of course.
Oh, that's a very good way of putting it.
Of course, but that should not be the only excuse. I think champagne still have a lot to do, and champagne has to go beyond celebrations, beyond those moments that everyone are expecting, and we should reach that point where we need no excuse to open a bottle of great champagne.
I entirely agree. We're going to go to a short break here, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Olivier Krug. You're listening to Wine and Dine.
Hello, my name is Ian Cobble, and I'm the U.S. Brand Ambassador for Krug Champagne.
Hi, my name is Carl Helin. I'm the director of Krug in the U.S., having the chance to work for Krug for almost 10 years now. And if you want to know more about the House of Champagne that produces only prestige cuvées, please visit our website, krug.com.
Thank you for listening to iWine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo-Chamberlain.
Welcome to Wine and Dine.
We are continuing our conversation with Olivier Krug. This is so wonderful that we have the opportunity to meet him in person, all of us listening. If you adore champagne, this is the champagne that you absolutely have to experience. It is such a unique experience. And the one thing I adore about champagne is that it puts an exclamation point on any moment in your life. It doesn't have to be wonderful. You have champagne and it will become wonderful. Olivier, this is kind of on a personal note. I'm curious, because every day is a journey, you're learning something new. But what do you know now that you didn't know, let's say, 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago? In all your travels around the world, and as the sixth generation of Champagne Krug and the family, what are you learning that's so new or unique?
Oh, yes. Probably you will not believe me, but what I learned was not around the world. What I learned was in a safe in my office for the last 25 years. And what I know is a book I opened, more than a book, a little diary, which is a diary that my great-great-great-grandfather wrote in 1848, 5 years after he started Krug. This diary has been shown to me when I joined Krug in 1989 by my grandfather, who asked me to read it. So I put it in a safe and I say, I will read it next month or next year. And actually, 25 years later, I didn't even touch that diary.
Oh, you forgot about it.
I almost forgot about it because for me there was no need to go in that diary.
Right.
Until someone who was talking to me about the history of Krug and the reason why Krug was founded, etc., pushed me to open that diary. And for me, it was a shock because he put all his vision and philosophy about Krug. His diary is a diary he wrote when he was 48 years old, which in 1848 was not so young.
Yeah.
His son was only 6. And so he felt that there was a risk that he could not transmit to his son. So he decided to write his vision, what he called Mon opinion sur les cuvées, his opinion on the champagne.
Okay.
And this was absolutely spectacular because this is the day I understood not how we make Krug, because of course I knew from my dad, from my granddad, but I understood the reason why Krug was founded 170 years ago.
Oh my gosh. When did you read the diary all in one sitting?
Almost. So part of it was a bit boring, a lot of figures, inventories, etc.
Okay.
But the most interesting part was the part when he said, if you want to make a great champagne, you have to start with great grapes.
Yes.
And great wines. Of
yes.
course.
Yes.
He even added, there are cases when you might be tempted to use grapes of a lesser quality and even succeed. But you should never do that. Otherwise, you may miss your operation and lose your reputation. And this is the first sentence of his diary. And that shows how far he was going in terms of details and obsession for those little details from the very early days.
So he was a man of great integrity.
He was a man of great integrity. He had a vision. He had a great expertise of champagne because he had been working more than 10 years in the biggest champagne house of that time.
Okay.
And when he decided to leave, he was a powerful man because he was managing the biggest champagne house. But he left because he had this vision, his ideas, his dream to create a champagne that did not exist then, a champagne that would offer every year, whatever the base year, whatever the vintage, would offer every year the richest expression of champagne. And this champagne is the Grand Cuvée you are currently drinking.
Yes, yes. And at that time, was the fashion for champagne to be sweet, or was Grand Cru the same stylistically as it is today?
At that time, absolutely. At that time, some of the market, the Nordic market in
yes.
In Europe, loved sweet champagne. Some of the
Russia.
Other European markets loved champagne which was dry.
Okay.
He made a champagne from the beginning which was dry, very very sharp. At the same time, rich and fresh, as you know well, as
yes.
you told me. And champagne was at that time had two offers. Non-vintage and vintages.
Okay.
And, of course, vintages were only produced in very, very good years, as you know.
Yes.
And for Joseph Krug, it was very frustrating not to be able to offer the best possible quality every year. So he decided to create a champagne that would go beyond the influence of vintages.
Was he a wealthy man to begin with, to have that vision where you're sitting on inventory for aging and for blending for that length of time, one must have incredible faith. And I know you are saying vision, but it requires quite a bit of faith also.
His wealth was his faith. He was not wealthy. He had a good earning from his job because he had a very, very good position. But since he came from Germany on his own, he had no personal, no family fortune. So he had to borrow money. And I know that he completely paid his partner in 1866. So 23 years after he started Krug, he finished to pay his partner, and that was the year he died. And the year he died, his son Paul became the only owner with his mother,
wow.
the only owner of Krug Champagne. So this is the time when Krug became completely a Krug family-owned house.
Wow, that was a strange gift that he gave Paul. That it was that he had that all settled before he passed.
That was a very good one for sure.
Mm. I know that there's a lot up on the website for people to be referring to when it comes to Krug and food, but do you
yes.
have any particular favorites? Or, at home, what are you going to have for dinner tonight? Which begs the next question, do you drink Krug champagne every day with lunch or dinner?
I drink Krug champagne almost every day because it's part of my, not my job, of my life.
Yes.
And I have this very happy situation that makes me taste Krug in the morning, in the evening,
gosh.
With food, without food, with
yes.
all kinds of friends in
yes.
all kinds of different countries. I even drink Krug from different eras, and there is not a week without someone coming to me with a bottle of coming from the 60s, 70s, and sometimes from the 20s
wow.
to share with me. So I'm completely spoiled about that. It's true that Krug is a great champagne to match with food, but this is not the only condition to drink Krug. And I personally strongly believe that when you have a great bottle of wine, a great bottle of champagne in your cellar, food is not the only excuse to have it. What people are looking for when they have a bottle of Krug is the right moment, the right friend, of course, because yes. You always open your bottle of Krug with your best friend, whether he or she is a connoisseur or not,
right.
Is not so important.
Yes.
The heart makes it. You must have very good glasses, and this is a very important point today in that speech. I am sorry to say that I usually break the flutes, because a great champagne is like a great wine. A great champagne should not be drunk in a flute. A flute doesn't allow the aromas to develop, to express, and people would miss 90% of the pleasure. So a great champagne should not be served too cold and should not be served in a flute. It has to be served in a proper glass, which is slightly open, a kind of tulip-shaped glass, Chardonnay, white, burgundy, white glass, and this is perfect for the expression of the champagne.
And that's exactly what I drink it in. And you know what? As you're talking, it occurs to me that is precisely... I really don't like having food with champagne. Gregory and I, it begs for your attention. I mean, so
absolutely.
Food is a distraction.
But tonight is very special, because tonight I'm going back home with a bag which is next to me. I have olive oil, which I will keep, but I have a little piece of a 36-month Parmigiano that an Italian friend brought me this morning. He came at 9 to my office. We had Parmigiano and a single glass, of course, of Grand Cuvée for breakfast to start the day at 9. But tonight I'm going to bring back this Parmigiano at home. All the kids will be home, and with my wife and my kids we'll have a bottle of Grand Cuvée and this Parmigiano, and that will be the best possible match with the family tonight to start the weekend.
Oh, that's wonderful. You're giving people ideas for moments, for creating new moments.
Absolutely.
Mm. I love having champagne when it's snowing out.
Yes, so do I.
Oh my gosh, because it's like, I don't know, it's just so soothing to watch the snow come down and enjoy a glass of Krug Grand Cuvée.
Absolutely. Mm. But there's also a glass of champagne on the beach with lobster and a nice sunset is also something quite nice.
You're pulling it right back to where I'm at, because I'm talking to you from the coast of North Carolina, and I thank you for doing so. This has really been our great pleasure talking to you today, and I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Merci beaucoup. Cheers.
We will have links up for you to learn more about Champagne Krug. And obviously, wherever you're listening to this conversation, you will be able to go to your wine merchant and purchase, as well as online. You're listening to Wine and Dine. Listening to iWine Radio.